And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And tonight we are blessed. Now, this is a mouthful, but we have author Toni Elizabeth Sara Petrinovich. Is that correct?
Perfect.
Oh, beautiful. So welcome. I don't know which to call you. Toni?
Toni's fine. Yes. The other two names cropped up throughout life circumstances. But I was born Toni, and Toni it is.
All right. Well, now, you are an author of what we're going to talk about tonight, which is an ebook called You, A Field Guide. But you've also authored a book called The Call, which is Awakening the Angelic Healing?
Human.
Human, Awakening that's right.
Angelic Human, huh?
Yes. And you've had a very interesting journey. So I'd like to start with that this evening. So welcome, Toni. And I'd like to talk about, you know, a little bit about how you've gotten to where you are right now, because I think it's a pretty interesting journey.
Okay. Sometimes people think that what I'm going to say next is a fortunate circumstance, and sometimes people think it's unfortunate, but be that as it may, I was born remembering both sides of the veil, if you would, using those terms because we need to use language. In other words, I remembered where I had come from, what it felt like, and now I was here. And I'm sure there are a lot of children who do remember that and are sort of talked out of it by their parents because they think they have imaginary friends or what have you. I had an experience that assisted me in being able to retain that because my father was killed when I was five. My sister was four at the time. I was five, the only two children. My father was killed in a hunting accident, and my mother said to me, "Your father is gone now. He will not be coming back, and you will be the father now." And while people say, "What? Child abuse," you know, or something along those lines, for me it felt like, oh, okay. And I remember in my little mind thinking, now it begins. And it was like falling off a log. It was not a big deal. And I wasn't the father from the standpoint of being her peer, but from the standpoint of taking out the garbage, watering the lawn, mowing the lawn, doing the things that Dad would do, that's what I did. And because of that, it put me in a place where I didn't have a lot of relationships with other children. So it kept me in between these two worlds all the time because then I had, if I wanted to go away, if I wanted to take a rest, I would go where I was most familiar without a lot of friends around to talk to because I didn't have time to establish those friends. And I grew up that way, feeling very comfortable with it. Every once in a while, I remember there being a little kind of a childhood, I wonder what it would feel like just to be one of the gang. But I never really desired it. And by the time I was 12, I told my mother that I wanted to become a Carmelite nun, that I wanted to enter the monastery, the cloister, and go behind the veil, behind the wall, and that I really didn't want to have to interact with mankind anymore. And so she said, well, she would ask the bishop and see what he said. And he said, yes, that I could, between my 12th and 13th year of school, go ahead and do that, the ages of 12 and 13. Mm-hmm. And my mother, being very, very smart, went out and bought horses and stabled them, because we didn't have a place for them, but stabled them with some friends, and then took my sister and me out to dinner and said, I wanted to let you know the bishop said yes for the summer between, you know, your school years, and you can go ahead and go in the monastery. Meanwhile, I've bought horses, and your sister and I will be horseback riding for the summer, and we'll just save your horse for you until you come out at the end of the summer. Well, what 12-year-old girl doesn't want a horse? So I thought, now, wait a minute. If I can go out and ride, I was in Nevada, in Reno, and at the time, Reno wasn't anywhere as big as it is now. There was a lot of outlying areas where you could go out and ride, and it was wonderful. It was very wild. I thought, if I could just go out in the desert and ride my horse, then that solves the issue. You know, I'm fine. So I didn't go in the monastery. Thank you. Thank you, Mother. And I did ride horseback. And by the time I was in my late teens, early 20s, the drive to find some sort of foundation for what I knew to be real took me away from the Catholic Church that I was raised in and set me on the path to discover something that would speak to me of all the worlds that I was experiencing. And I found it in the Holy Order of Mans in San Francisco in 1969. And I entered the order and stayed there for several years and became a master teacher within the Holy Order very easily. There were classes and various things you had to learn, and I didn't need to do that because I already knew it. So I just went in and went through the various pieces of learning to understand the foundation of the order and then became one of their teachers and stayed there for several years. And then I left, and the order disbanded not too long after I left, and I started teaching on my own after that. So it's sort of been a self-guided journey, and at the same time, one that I know a lot of mutual souls who are part of my own spiritual life have been assisting with in many, many ways. Hmm. And it, at first, now that I'm 62, so I can look back and I can see how things have kind of formed different ways of looking. That, you know, I know everyone goes through this, but at the same time, if I hadn't experienced life, when I left the monastery, life became very hard. From the standpoint of just living day to day. And if I hadn't experienced the difficulties that I experienced from then until, say, the last 10 years, I wouldn't understand what people go through, because it would be outside my frame of reference. It would be just me being this spiritually oriented person kind of walking the streets, not getting it. But I went through many, many, many very uncomfortable experiences as a human being, and that allowed me to see what it feels like to get the ego personality caught up in something and think that you can't find a way out,
right,
that you're stuck. And now that I can look back on that, I can say, wow, okay, that's what people go through, and that's where this person is, or this is how this person is experiencing this or that. So it's assisted me in my teaching now, so that when somebody says, well, this is what's happening to me, I can say to them, wow, I do understand, because something very similar happened to me as well, and we can really resonate at that level.
Nice.
So basically, that's how I got to where I am, in a nutshell.
In a nutshell. Hmm. And your book really, you know, it helps us understand and define, I think, you know, the oneness that we're trying to achieve and how we keep ourselves separate.
Yes.
Through our ego and our mind, and really the fact that we're trying, and I think this is becoming more and more obvious, that we're trying to control ourselves or our outcomes or our future through our fears and our beliefs and the ego personality that we have.
I agree. And right in the last, say, 6 months or so, I post a YouTube every week to assist people. I have a mailing list, and I put it on the mailing list like the new YouTube is up, you know, click here kind of thing. But also anybody who goes to YouTube, of course, can see it, and there's a lot of subscribers just from YouTube itself. And what I'm doing with that, in the last 6 months, I've kind of shifted away from some of the teaching I do. I do a lot of quantum physics teaching. I do a lot of metaphysics teaching. I teach the DNA and the heart, and this has been my kind of the shtick that I come from. This is what I know the best.
Right.
But I've kind of shifted it a little bit, and I'm asking people to look at how tied they are to being light workers and how much that is driving, that idea that they are, is driving what they believe is true for them to the point that their ego personality now has control again.
Hmm.
Because as soon as we name ourselves something and we say, I am a light worker, I am this, I am that, we separate ourselves from everybody that we believe are not.
Yeah.
And though I know there are people out there that probably wouldn't even understand what that word is supposed to mean, that those people are God as much as we are. And they have the ability to exercise their own knowing as much as anybody else does. And I really am asking the listeners, if you feel caught up in your spiritual world, like you feel that you can't move forward, or you feel like a lot of people come to me, I do readings, and a lot of people have been coming saying, I'm stuck, I can't move. And I'm finding a similarity, and it's in the idea that, just like you were saying, we're supposed to be a certain way, we're supposed to do certain things, and it isn't true. And it's a huge mouthful to bite off to say, well, wait a minute. You mean I don't have to walk down the street blazing light and glory and making sure that everybody knows that I know and, you know, all of these things that people try and do. And no, you don't.
Yeah.
And then people say to me, well, what do I do then?
Yeah.
Well, go look at a flower. What is it doing? It's being there. And it's blooming, and it's letting everybody smell it, and it's being completely itself.
Right.
And, of course, there's not a lot of support in our world for being yourself.
Mm.
You know, there's that idea that everybody has of, you know, how you're supposed to be. And, again, I can go back and thank my mother. My mother was very, you know, the old serial Dynasty on television?
Yeah.
That was my mother. Okay? So I was raised in that world. My father was going to be governor when he got killed. I mean, I was raised in a world with servants and maids and all this stuff. And when he died, my mother tried to maintain that. So I got to see this glitz, this pretend happening all the time, which really brought me up short and said, wait a minute, this isn't real. I mean, this could fall apart at any moment.
Hmm.
And I know that a lot of people try and maintain that same idea for themselves, however, or whatever that means for them. It doesn't have to be the same as Dynasty, but whatever it means within their own peer group, and then eventually it all fails. And they feel like they're a failure.
Right.
And it's not true.
Right. And so mostly, I guess, from what you're saying, and I know that we'll talk about it as we go through, you know, the different concepts, but, you know, mostly it's because we have this individuated personality that we believe is who we are, because that's kind of the one that sort of what the world sees and how we grew up and how we were defined and our beliefs and our values. And that concept seems to be, you know, how we want to define ourselves. But in doing that, we're judging and we're trying to control and we're trying to make who we are right, and therefore putting blame and some of the fear-based concepts onto other people or onto other situations and not taking responsibilities. And so it's this cycle that we go through. And I really appreciate you talking about, you know, some of the people that want to be light workers, or, you know, even the New Age movement, where we get caught up in the spiritual ego can be just as challenging when it gets in place than, you know, the personality ego. And I'm not sure that there's any difference, but certainly we need to learn how to work with it and not try to detach from it and put it somewhere in a box.
No, I agree with you. I think the ego has gotten a really bum rap from the standpoint that, you know, people say, well, I have to kill my ego. Well, fine, bye, you're leaving then. you're going to be gone. That's your individuation. You won't be around. And that is our individuation. I like to say it's sourcing itself. Mm. It's the Godhead, however we see that source, all that is, the light orbs say it's the eminence. It's that which is creating more of itself, and each of us is part of that more. So from that standpoint, we can decide what we want to be and know that in that, when we talk about the oneness, you know, the politically correct oneness that everybody likes to talk about, and I talk about it a lot, it means that everything that we're doing, the conversation we're having right now, is affecting everything, everywhere, at all time. And it's a big leap to understand that unless you think about, for instance, a hologram and how a hologram, like even on our credit cards and, you know, those places where you see holograms,
right,
that every part of it is part of that whole. So that's what we are. We are part of a whole, and yet we are the whole also. And once a person begins to get that, however they're going to get it, then you realize that everything that you're thinking, everything you're saying, every act that you take affects everything. So basically, if you really want nothing but peace to be on earth, be it. That's what Gandhi meant when he said you have to be the change you want to see in the world. Be it fully in yourself, and then you're feeding that into the energy stream that you are living in. And that, right there, is the key to the now very famous Law of Attraction, The Secret. Because people, a lot of people say, I don't get it. You know, I don't get The Secret. I don't get the Law of Attraction. you attract by default. You can't not attract on a physics basis. Your vibration, your frequency, the wavelength of you is constantly attracting something to you. So you can decide either I just want to do all the things I'm doing and I'll just attract whatever, or you can make a decision of how you want to hold your feeling inside of you and attract to you those things that make you happy, make you comfortable, make you joyous, bring you peace.
Right.
And that's up to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a decision that each person really needs to take. And I know that a lot of people say, well, it's easy to say and it's harder to do. Yes. And that's why usually when I'm working with a person, when I'm teaching someone, I really encourage them to call up what I call your inner pirate.
Hmm.
To call up that part of you that is ready to do whatever needs to be done, no matter what the stakes. Because until you can go to that place, you'll never fulfill what you want to fulfill. You'll always hold back somewhere until you step forward and you say, I don't care what happens. I know this is what is my next piece, whatever that is, to do, to say, to think, to be. And you do it without that feeling around you of, oh, my gosh, what is someone going to think? What's going to happen next? What if? You simply do what you need to do. Then you know who you are. Did you see The Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl?
Mm-hmm.
I saw it 30 times.
Really?
And I own one of the original huge leather banners that they don't even make anymore. Someday it's going to be worth thousands. 9 by 6 feet that they hung in the theater. That movie, I took every class in the United States that I taught went to that movie. I mean, everybody that knows me, oh, yeah, that's the pirate lady. Because I said, I want you to watch this man. I want you to watch Jack Sparrow, not because I'm in love with Johnny Depp. I want you to watch his character.
But we all are in love with Johnny Depp.
Well, yeah, kind of, maybe. I don't know. But what I liked about Jack Sparrow was that every time he did something, and it came out in the first movie more than it did in the other two, every time he did something, and somebody said, wait a minute, you're supposed to be dead. Wait a minute, you're not supposed to be here. How did you do that? He simply said, you forget. I'm Captain Jack Sparrow.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he said. Time after time after time. And that's what I want to instill in people when I teach, is the reason you did it is because you are you. And that's why you did it. Not because you think it's the right thing or because you're a light worker or because you're trying to spread light or save the world, because you are you. You are God. And that's why you did it. And when people can come to that place, then they're authentic.
Yeah.
Then they're being who they are. And they don't have to be concerned anymore about what everybody's telling them they should or they shouldn't do, because they know. Everybody's idea of should and shouldn't is relative. It's their own perception.
Right. And you talk about perception a lot, about how our perception is not based on reality. It's based on our past. It's based on experiences that have happened to us. It's based on our beliefs and our values. And we need to kind of debunk our perceptions.
Exactly. Because everything that we believe, and I'm just using this very globally here when I say this,
mm-hmm.
has been given to us from somebody else. I do a lot of research, a lot. And it's just one of my things, my penchants that I love to do, to take a stream of thought. Okay, one easy for me because I was a Catholic, the Catholic Church, how did it start, what happened, where did it come from, da 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 da. I can sit down with a really good Catholic and really shake their boots because I've spent so much time figuring out how it got to be what it is today, which is a huge political organization that is a religion. And if you take anything that you are taught to believe and you follow it back, you will find out that it came from someone who believed at one time that if they did this or that, they would be able to have more power, more money, more control.
Mm.
It is always that way. Never any other way, because they're human beings. And what drives the animal part of us, the reptilian brain part of us, is survival, which means more food, more land, more money, more wives, more husbands, more children, whatever it is, depending upon where you were, what state stage of the game it is, what part of the earth you're in, what country you live in, the company you keep, et cetera. It's always that. And when we realize that, it's kind of earth-shattering, because then everything that everybody thinks is real isn't real anymore. It's all been created for a specific reason that you may or may not agree with. If you agree with it and you say, well, yeah, wow, I would have done the same thing, I think that's great, then okay, go for it. But if it doesn't match up with what you feel is true for you, then you have an opportunity, an invitation, to release that from your own sense of what your reality is and see what you want to replace it with. I mean, I like to say there's no belief, I have no belief system, but even that is a belief system. I mean, you always have something that you say is your belief.
Right.
And whatever I personally feel is true for me, I want to make sure it's really true for me, not because somebody else thinks it's supposed to be true for me.
Okay.
No matter what it is.
That could take a little deep thinking or deep research.
Oh, it would. It would. And yet you have to really take it to the bank. I can remember being in a meeting last year with a bunch of attorneys and businessmen and stuff, and we were trying to figure out a thing I was involved in, and everybody was having a hard time. And I knew how things like this usually go, and I just was sitting there, and I kept putting my piece in, and people were kind of listening to me, and they were listening to everybody else. And finally one guy looked at me, and he goes, "Why are you so sure that you're right?" And I said, "Because I'm God, and I know I am." And he said, "Okay, then let's take your idea and go with it." And everybody did.
Wow.
And afterwards he said, "I cannot believe that they agreed with you." I said, "Well, I just said how I felt, and it worked." Because there's that part inside of everybody, I like to call it the yearning. There's that yearning inside of everybody to find that them that you would call God, that piece of you that really can stand there and take no matter what comes at it, it'll stand there and it'll hold you. And when you found that, and you can call it self-realization or enlightenment or ascension or whatever, I don't care what the name of it is, when you have found that, you know you found it, and there isn't any doubt anymore. And so when you're in that place and you voice from that place, that same place in everybody else gets triggered. And then everybody feels like, oh yeah, okay, well, let's do it, whatever it is, or let's say it, or it doesn't make any difference what the circumstances are. And that's what I like to invite people to do in their life when I'm working with them. I have a set of courses called Meta You, and that's what I work with, or I teach through. It's online and also through the telephone or in person if anybody happens to be in my area. But that's what I really work with. And what's really nice about it is that though there are metaphysical and quantum physics principles, I tailor the course for what the person wants to accomplish in their life right now. So rather than just taking a course and then saying, okay, how am I going to fit this into my life? It's like, all right, what's going on in your life? Who are you? What are you doing? What do you want to know? Let's tailor this to fit you.
Nice.
And it works. Yeah, it works really well, because then they can take the examples, and I set up examples for them that are particular to them, and they can take them right into their life, right then, and put them to use to see how this works, rather than trying to figure out something that's kind of esoteric that doesn't make any sense to day-to-day living.
Right.
And so that helps.
Right. And there certainly is a lot of information out there that you could get confused and not know how it fits into your life.
Oh, well, it's true. And, you know, I'm on a lot of newsletters and different things. Just I like to keep up with what everybody's doing. And I feel that in a certain sense, the New Age / spiritual / lightworker blah, blah, blah movement is not, how do I say this? I can feel it. Not making the most of what they say they are. I guess that's the best way to say it. It's like, okay, if you know that you are a light worker, what does that mean? Well, first of all, just as a physics principle, we are light. I don't mean spiritual. Get away from all the spiritual ideas. Just a physics principle, we are light. We are photons. That's what we're made of at the very basic foundation of our physical body. And because we are light, and because this dimension vibrates at a wavelength that is slow enough to make it appear solid, we're not aware of how light we are. So we really don't need to work with the light. All we need to do is be aware that we are light and to hold that space. Well, around that physics concept has been attached a lot of spiritual meaning. So if you see somebody that you don't like for some reason, then you'll say, well, they're not light enough, they're dark. And I don't mean you personally, I just mean it, you know, anybody. And that isn't true. They're just as light as you are. It's just that their vibration is different than yours, and it doesn't necessarily feel good to you. So when I see things come out where people say they have to clear a room of dark energy, or they have to, you know, go home after they've been out in a crowd, and they have to make sure that they do all of these exercises to make sure they get rid of all this energy on them, all it is a belief. Because all of it is light no matter where we are. That's all there is. There isn't anything else. It's our belief that it's something else that makes it something else, because that's what our mind tells us, and then we believe it, and then we experience it. Go back to the law of attraction again. But in reality, all it is light. That's the only thing that exists. There isn't anything else. No matter what dimension you're in, no matter what frequency you're vibrating at, there's only one substance that makes us all up. And we use the word light. I mean, we could use the word anything, but yeah. Photons, light, we have to use words. So we get to decide how we want to see other people, other situations. When you walk into a room, like if somebody said, you know, well, I walk into, you know, my cousin's house, and every time I walk in there, it just feels terrible because they've always been fighting. Okay, then here's your invitation to be the light that you are, and just walk into the room and stand there until that room feels like you. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to clear the room. You don't have to make sure they understand. You don't have to process anything. You don't have to make sure you're clean. You just stand there, because what's going to happen is that the incoherent vibration in the room is going to want to be coherent like you are, because that's what life thrives on, and it's going to change. So that's all you need to do. You don't need to do anything else.
Right.
And I would love to see more of that going around the, you know, the internet workshop, light workers, new age circles. And that's what I keep putting out there, is to just, my next movie is going to be called Are You Light, or Are You Light-Light, L-I-T-E, you know, like light food. Are you really what you say you are? Because that's all you need to be. And I understand that a lot of people feel that it's hard because of their life circumstances. You know, they feel caught in a marriage, a relationship, a job, a town, whatever. No one's caught any place. They're only caught there because they're afraid to make a move to change it. Because if they do, they don't know what's going to happen, and that's the sticking point. They don't really trust that they're God and that they will be fine.
Right.
Because they're light. That's all there is. There isn't anything else. And that's in my book, You, A Field Guide. That's what I'm talking about, and how the ego personality will find a way every single time to come up with a but if. Yeah, that's what I really stress in the book, is that just about the time you go, oh, God, I finally got it. Oh, fine. The ego says, yeah, and then it just comes up with one more thing. Now you've got it. Now you're on top of the heap. Now you're better than the people who haven't got it. And there you are again.
Right.
So what the invitation is to understand that everyone's experiencing the same thing, more or less, in one way or another. And all we need to do is to hold ourselves in a coherent vibration, which is the troughs and the crests are equal. That's what life is. Like right now I'm looking out the front window, and there's all these trees, and there's flowers, and there's water. All of it, if you were to look at it under a microscope, has a trough and a crest in its wavelength of vibration that is equal, because that's what keeps life alive. That's what feels good. That's what good vibes are. That's what beautiful auras are. So staying in a vibration that is coherent, which means you feel at peace, you feel a sense of well-being, then that is the fullness of you. And you can bring that into any situation, anywhere, at any time. and watch everything around it, around you, change.
Right.
And then, of course, you better be ready for whatever happens after that, because people are going to say, how'd you do that? And you can say, well, I didn't. I just sat here.
And to get to that place, most of us have to, I guess, meditate and find that stillness or find that place within and just allow silence and the voice of our soul.
True. And concentrate on the heart space. The
right.
heart is the strongest electromagnetic organ in our body.
I found that fascinating.
5,000 times more magnetic, 60 times more electric than our brain.
Yeah, I found
it
that fascinating.
It runs the show. And, you know, it has a lot of press from the standpoint of the heart and romance and Valentine's Day, et cetera. But from the standpoint of, like, when you look at someone's aura, it's actually coming from the electromagnetic field is coming from the heart. And the heart itself, I call it the voice of your soul, because it knows on a non-intellectual level what is best for you in every moment. That's why when you feel like you really want to do something, I really want to do that, I really do, and your mind goes, oh yeah, but remember the last time you did, or be careful because remember you saw that advertisement, or don't do that because if you do you'll get fat, or you know, whatever it is that comes up in your mind. Your head plays the game, and your heart's saying, no, go do this, go do that. And there's this tug of war that happens between the heart and the mind. And the heart actually is stronger, so the mind has to work harder. People get headaches, literally, and get into very stressed conditions because the heart is saying, this isn't where you belong, this isn't what feels good, this isn't what you want. And the mind saying, yes, but.
So are we talking the actual heart?
The actual heart itself, the organ itself, yes.
The organ.
That's why I'm sure you've read stories about people who have had heart transplants, and then they start to have the same attributes that another person who the heart was taken from.
Yes.
There's some wonderful stories about people who have been killed violently, like murders,
right.
who have left instructions, if I ever die or whatever, you know, donate my heart. And the heart's donated, and the person who receives the heart can name the killer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there's one great story in a book called The Heart Code by Paul Pearsall. He was sick, and I don't remember what was wrong with him, but it wasn't his heart. He was ill. And he was in a hospital, and they didn't have any place for him, so they put him in the transplant wing because that's the only space they had. And he got to witness this young man receiving a heart from a girl who had been raped and murdered, and no one knew who did it. And after the young man received the heart, he said, the man had a blue jacket, the license plate on his car was such and such, it was the make of the car was this, it was this time at night, blah, 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 and they went and they got him, and it was him.
Wow.
Because the little girl has seen it, but then she was dead, so she couldn't say anything. And the organ itself retains the cellular memory of not only those kinds of things, but what our soul, from the standpoint of our Akashic record, it retains the memory of why we're here. And that's why it's constantly trying to drive us and tell us, do this next, go here, say hi to this person, don't go over there. And people don't pay any attention, usually, unless, of course, it's some great heartthrob like Johnny Depp or something like that. But just from the little things.
Right.
Like, I can remember before I moved to Lopez Island, where I live now, which is just, you know, a little slice of heaven on earth, I was living in Anacortes. This is Washington State. It's right on the coast. Anacortes is where you take the ferry to the San Juan Islands, and Lopez Island is in the San Juan Islands.
Okay.
And I was getting ready to move over here, but I hadn't moved yet. And I was here, and I was with Philip, my boyfriend, and we were sitting on the beach, and my intention was to come here for a few days and then go back and get my back deck repaired so I could sell my house and move here. We're sitting on the beach, and I'm just getting this feeling like I really don't want to go back and do this deck and deal with the house and do all of these things. And my mind is saying, yes, but you know you have to do this. It's your responsibility. And my heart's saying, no, just stay here. Don't go back. Don't worry about the deck. It'll get taken care of. My mind's saying, yes, but the guy's already going to come. There we go. I was going to Philip, and I said, you know what? I'm doing what I teach people not to do. I'm sitting here playing this mind game with myself. I'm going to call the carpenter right now and tell him not to come on Friday because I'm not going to be there. So I called him, and he got mad. And I said, well, sorry you're mad, but I'm not going to be there, and we're not going to do it, and I'll see if we are going to do it. I don't know. Goodbye. Friday dawned, and it was the only day of the entire week where it poured rain in Anacortes and Lopez Island. It had been completely sunny the whole week. If I had gone home, which I didn't want to do, I wouldn't have been able to get the deck repaired anyway because it was raining so hard.
Mm-hmm.
And all I did was listen to what my heart was saying and not try and figure out why it was saying it or if I was just wanting to stay here because the island's so beautiful and, you know, playing all these mind games with myself. I simply listened to what I really wanted to do. It was the biggest example for me. And the deck did get finished later. It wasn't a big deal. It was simply that I had made a commitment that I thought I had to fulfill, and you don't necessarily have to. You can change what you're experiencing. And that's where people get caught, is the thinking that because we've said, I will do this, we are now stuck in this place of saying, I will do this. Well, what if your heart's really saying, don't do that? Things have changed. You don't want to do that now. And people are afraid to say, no, I won't. And yet, if you're your inner pirate and you're Captain Jack, then you're going to say, sorry, I'm me, and I'm not going to do that because I know that I shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
And then you own you, and you're authentic, and you are who you are, and you'll scare people to death. Truly, because people are afraid of that, because it triggers that in them. Everybody wants to do that. Everybody wants to be who they really are.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, how much support is there for that in your standard day-to-day life? Very little.
Right.
And that's where the ego personality gets you, because it says, well, if I do this, then so-and-so is going to think this or that or whatever. I mean, you know, it'll go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
I tried that with a lady once. She was great. She said, she kept coming up with all these excuses. And I said, you know what? I want us to play a game. We're going to go with your ego's idea of why you can't do what you want to do, and I will be here for you as many phone calls as it takes until you run out of excuses. And she said, okay, let's do it. Well, we did this like twice a week for a month, and finally one day she said, I can't think of any other reason why I shouldn't go forward with what I want to do. And I said, are you sure? And she went, oh my gosh, I just thought of a whole new line of defense. She said, we could start all over again. And I said, yeah, I know. It'll never end. You might as well give up now, because your ego personality will always try and keep you separate. And it's not because it's bad. It's because that's the part of us that is the individuation. It's the separate part of us. And people will say, well, yeah, and people have said to me, why are we made like that? We're made individual for the experience of it, and we can just thrill in the experience of the individuation without having to think that we need to do everything a certain way because everybody else says we should.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what it is, whether it's religion, government, family, friends, I don't care what it is. And that doesn't mean that you always have to fight upstream. You can simply open your heart to a person and ask them to open their heart to you and tell them where you're coming from, and 9 times out of 10, a person will understand you.
Right. And you said in your book that, you know, one of our greatest fears is not what we think. It's really that we're most afraid of Source. We're really most afraid of being in that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are. We're afraid. Well, it's like that. I can't remember the quote exactly, but it's not. We're not afraid of the darkness in us. We're afraid of the light in us.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne Williamson and Nelson Mandela, somewhere along the line, that came out. The realization that you are actually God, and I'll just use that word as a word.
Yep.
Kind of overused. The realization that you are God scares people to death, because now you have no one to blame. You have no one to look up to. You have no one to pray to. So what are you going to do? I mean, you're kind of off adrift in this boat on the ocean with no oars. It's all up to you. A lady on Facebook the other day, who knows me well, emailed me off of the main wall page and said, would you talk to me about prayer? I feel like there's no reason to do it.
Mm.
And I said, well, if you're talking about prayer the way it's, you know, done standardly, you're right, there isn't. I mean, it's just an exercise in futility. But if you're talking about feeling a sense of well-being and wanting that to encompass someone, then you have something to talk about. But very few people, it's like Greg Braden's book, The Isaiah Effect. The Essene Scrolls were talking more about the feeling of what prayer is, and that isn't something that we're taught as children. So if you feel, for instance, that you see a person who is ill and you don't want them to be ill, well, my first question is, why don't you want them to be ill? Well, they're suffering. Well, how come you believe that you know they shouldn't be suffering? But, you know, it's this whole mind twist game that we've been taught that we're, especially in the United States, don't look at suffering, don't look at illness, and don't look at death. They don't exist. Get them out of here.
Hmm.
We all have these experiences. So if we want to really, quote-unquote, pray for somebody, what we want to do is to hold ourselves in this state of well-being that I was talking about, this coherent state, and hold it for all. Then the person who is ill receives it. The people who are taking care of that person receive it. In whatever measure they're able to receive it, and you're not responsible for making a determination how that happens. And that's truly what, quote-unquote, God does. If you think of God as simply being, God is being and is not sitting there in judgment, even though your religion would have you believe it, not sitting in judgment of anything, is simply saying, okay, let's have an experience. What is that experience going to be? And it isn't about trying to make it be a certain way. This person can't be sick. This person should be well. This person should be healed. It's up to that person to make that decision because it's their experience. And that's the thing that scares everybody, because then there's no place to go. There's surely nowhere to go. And if you do research, which I've done way back, way hundreds of thousands of years ago, you can imagine the first, quote-unquote, caveman seeing the stars in the sky and deciding that he needed to put a rock pedestal up to honor the stars in the sky, and then the next generation came along and said, that's the sacred rock. It honors the stars in the sky, and pretty soon it was a very sacred rock, and pretty soon only certain people could touch it, and it just becomes this thing that doesn't really have any basis for anything. It's who we are, is God. And when we realize that and we operate from that standpoint, it changes your whole life. Because then you don't have anything to look towards that is outside of you that is supposed to make everything be okay or punish you or tell you what the rules are. The rules are your rules. And if people say, well, my rule is that I'm going to go out and steal, well, okay, then there's ramifications to that. You know, you might want to change your rule. It's up to you, but it depends upon where you live, too. I mean, you know, some places, if you steal something from another tribe, it's a great, you know, honor. It depends. Everything's so relative. It depends upon where you are. And people say, well, yeah, there's one law, and you shouldn't murder anybody. And I said, well, you just go around the other side of the earth and tell them that, because there's a whole bunch of people over there that believe that that is an honorable thing to do. And I'm not saying right or wrong either way. I'm just saying not everybody believes the way the United States of America believes.
Right.
Everything is relative to the way we're raised, and at the same time, it's simply God having this experience.
Right.
And to me, that's where the fun is, because then you can just, you know, decide whatever you want to do is really a good time and just enjoy it all. It doesn't have to be a certain way. It's freedom. It's the freedom that everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's no stress, which is what is killing everybody in the faster moving countries like our own.
Let's talk about stress, because you do bring it up a lot in your book.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, It's a separator. Stress is a separator.
Right.
Stress is how the ego personality makes sure that you stay separate. Because stress only happens when you begin to believe that, and I'm just going to use a whole bunch of different words here, you need to accomplish something, you need to have a certain set of goals, you need to have the cleanest house, you need to have the newest car, you need to have your job fulfilled in a certain way, you need to make your boss happy. It's all these things that you believe that frustrate you beyond words that you're supposed to be doing. And it separates you from those people that you believe you have to please, or you have to do this, or you have to do that. It separates you. So let's say, for instance, you feel like you have to please your boss in a certain way, and you feel that you can't. Well, if I was just talking to one person who brought that up, I'd first ask, why do you feel that you have to do that? Well, because then he'll think that I am doing a good job. Well, why do you want to do a good job? Well, because then I'll get paid more money. Well, why do you need more money? Because then I can pay my bills better, and then I can have a bigger house. So it's all of these ideas that we have put together that create this separation. Instead of saying, the reason I want to do my job really well is because it makes me feel really good. Mm. Period.
Right.
And somebody goes, you've got to be kidding. I hate my job. Then why are you there? I need the money. You need the money bad enough to live the way you're living? So it always goes back to this belief system about how we're supposed to be, and at the same time, the stress, what it does is creates incoherency in our wavelengths, which means that our troughs and crests are not equal. Incoherent wavelengths, and the frequency is how fast it goes up and down. Incoherent frequencies of wavelengths cannot match up with anything. So, for instance, if you've got two people in a room who have coherent wavelengths, they're going to harmoniously come together in some way. Even if one is a dyed-in-the-wool Christian and one's a dyed-in-the-wool Buddhist, okay? If they're both coherent in their wavelengths, just from a physics standpoint, the wavelengths will harmoniously overlap easily in some way, and they will have a nice conversation or be easy together. It's incoherency that cannot overlap, because there's no incoherent wavelength that's going to come into a room or an environment with another one. It's going to be exactly the same. It's all jagged. It's going all over the place. And that's what stress causes.
Okay.
So you're stressed. You walk into a stressful situation, and now you've got more stress, because now everybody's more incoherent. You know, like if you say to somebody, I can't understand you because you're so incoherent, that's what you're saying. I don't understand you because your vibration is all over the place and it can't match up with mine. It's impossible.
Hmm.
And what happens in incoherency is that we begin to literally see red. We do things that we say, I can't believe I did that. I don't even remember doing it. How could I possibly have done that? That's terrible. Because our cognitive function turns off. It's called cognitive inhibition. The cortex of your brain turns off if it doesn't receive coherent wavelength information. And then you are operating on automatic, like an animal does, out of instinct. So when you're in stress, that is how you are. That's what promotes road rage. That's what promotes people who beat up on other people, say, domestic violence and things of this nature. Because the incoherency keeps you from actually being a cognitive homo sapien. Then you just become somebody who's working on automatic, and you're usually angry, frustrated, upset. This separates you from everything around you, and everything around you becomes a target for the stress that is in you. It's someone's fault. I'm going to feel better if I take it out on that person. The projection of the anger or the frustration or the fear or the angst, the anxiety, whatever it is, gets projected out, and it pushes that other person away, that other situation, whatever it is. It pushes it away, and it keeps you separate. So in one sense, it's a tool for the ego personality to use to keep you from feeling in a state of well-being. And most people, when you try and talk to them this way about that subject, will say, well, yes, well, you just don't understand what I'm going through. okay, you wanted to tell me what you're going through, you know? And it's all self-built. It just keeps being added to and added to and added to. And to the finally, you get to the point where there's no way that you can say to someone, I love you and really mean it. There's no way that you can be caring towards somebody and really mean it. You can't get outside of yourself. You're so wrapped up in this difficult human response that that's the only thing that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually going back to what you were saying about meditating and being in silence. In my book, I talk about a tool for stress being stepping outside of time.
Mm.
And it's really about slowing yourself down. And that's what I tell people, you know, if you get into these places, if something comes up and you get into these places, simply sit down, and I call it stepping out of time, where you just step away from whatever is going on, literally. And I've done it in workshops where there's just been too much going on because too many people are triggered in too many ways, and I'm not going to get involved in it, and I'll just sit there and close my eyes, and I just go away and let them watch me.
Mm-hmm.
And the room gets real quiet, real fast. I'll just say, I'm just making sure that I'm real coherent before I open my mouth to you again. You can watch me do it. Because we're the only one responsible for changing that feeling inside of us and bringing ourselves back into that true inner peace that exists only outside of whatever we're experiencing. We need to take our attention away from it and put our awareness in the present moment so that we're simply right here in this moment, because everything that we're projecting on and everything we're thinking about that causes the stress is based on fear of the past, anticipation of the future, and those two play together all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go into this present moment, right now, in this very moment, nothing's happening. If you and I stop talking and we're just sitting here, then nothing's happening, and we're just here. And when you're there, there's nothing to be stressed about. Until your mind starts kicking in and says, yeah, but what about? And then you can just say, I'm sorry. Be quiet. Just quiet down. And I'm just going to be here now, and that's all I'm going to do. And the ego will fight that like crazy, because all of a sudden, you, big Y, are in control.
Right.
And it's an exercise, and it is infinite, and it is never-ending. Somebody said to me on the phone the other day, you mean you go through this too? I said, oh, my dear. You teach what you need to learn. Yes. Of course. And every time you do it, you refine it more and more and more. And so the more refined you get at it, the more you see it. The more you're aware of when you're not being coherent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. Actually, I like to say it's kind of addictive. The endorphins fire in the brain, the chemistry goes off, and you feel great.
Right. I think one of the blessings of being able to interview great guests such as yourself is, you know, remembering the simplicity of all of this. I think, you know, we get caught up in everyday life, and mm-hmm. we forget.
Yeah.
And even though we've had great moments of brilliance and connection, and you know, every time you're there, you go, how could I ever want to leave this place?
Right.
Life happens. We forget.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's a matter of remembering again. And it is so simple, yet
yeah.
we try to make it so difficult, or our ego tries to make it so difficult, or something.
Right. Exactly. And it's my partner, Philip, and I just, we talk about these things all the time, and we like to make these jokes because we have a regular relationship, like, you know, male-female relationship living in the same house, and things happen, and we'll look at each other, and we'll just go, oh, yeah, that's right, it's all about me, isn't it? I keep forgetting. You know, and we'll just laugh.
Right.
Because somebody will say something, and you'll think, well, how in the world could that person possibly say that? You know, I mean, after all. And it has nothing to do with you. It's they're just living their life. They're doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and everybody takes everything so personally. The book was written a long time ago by Jon Kabat-Zinn, Wherever You Go, There You Are.
Ah, yes.
The great chapter, did you read it? The one about the tuna fish can meditation? I think it's one of my favorite little stories. He had this tuna fish can meditation, that's what he calls it, because his family kept feeding the cats tuna fish and leaving the tuna fish can in the sink. And it was driving him bananas to go to the sink and find this dirty tuna fish can in the sink. And finally, one day, he got it. It had nothing to do with him. They didn't know it was bothering him. They didn't really care. They simply didn't take the time to put it in the garbage can. He was making it be about him, that they would leave the can in the sink, even though he hated it. And it had nothing to do with him at all. It was just somebody just being lazy. And he uses that tuna fish can meditation to show how we make things be something they're not. And we build a whole story around it. And that's how all of our lives are. We build this great story around all of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in them. And why everybody's doing everything. And none of it's true. Mm-hmm. We're making it all up. Which is fine. It's our own script. But make it up so that it's fun.
Yes. And like you remind us in your book, you know, it's always a choice. And the choice seems to be, do we want to live in love or do we want to live in fear?
Yes. That's it. That's always the choice. Always the choice. And in my workshops, one of the things that I teach people is if you're in fear with somebody, and if you're just thinking, well, you know, this is all great information and it's wonderful, except I can't do that with that person over there because I've tried over and over to talk to that person and I cannot. There's something that I have found that works every single time. I have never found it not to work. And that is if you get yourself, you center yourself in your heart, and you get right there so you're really feeling a sense of well-being, a sense of just deep appreciation for being God, and you just hold that feeling. And then you go to that person and say, I am coming to you with an open heart. Will you open your heart to me? They will always do it. So long as you're coherent. Because the coherency in them, when you invite that, will always open their heart for them. And that's something that I really ask the listeners to try. But don't just run into a room and do it. Get yourself so that you're in a state of feeling the well-being within you, of feeling the fullness of your own Godhead, so that you're at peace. And then take that piece to whoever it is that you want to interact with that is difficult to interact with and bring them that piece and invite them to feel it with you and see what happens.
So are we really saying this out loud to the person?
Yes.
Beautiful.
I used that to disarm a man in San Francisco who had a gun on the streets. He was going to shoot somebody, and he gave me the gun. It works every time. But you have to be in that place first. And you have to stay there. There's no room for fear. You don't have any choice. You have to stay in the space of absolute divine love and well-being, and then tell the person that you are coming with an open heart. Would you open your heart to me? And they'll do it. Because everybody wants to do it. Nobody ever gets asked to do it.
That's powerful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's like the final solution to communication issues. Which is what 9/10 of everything that everybody experiences is about anyway.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, hasn't this been a delight?
It's been wonderful, Lori. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Tell people how they can get a hold of you.
You can call me at 800-698-6215. Or you can go, I have three websites and they all have a common portal, as I like to call it, which is youaresacred.com. And from there you can go to any of the three websites. Or from there you can go to all my YouTubes, or from there you can subscribe to my newsletter.
Nice. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
Oh, yes. Go out and do one thing today that is really adventuresome, that is really you. Just everybody knows that there's something inside of you that you've really been wanting to do or say, and that you're afraid to do because you're afraid. That's all. You're just afraid. You don't know what's going to happen. Go do it. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It can be a little thing. Take baby steps. That's fine. And see how enthralling it is to step outside what you think your barrier, your boundary is. You don't have any boundaries. You're infinite. Go step outside the boundary you've created for yourself. And then once you've done that, then tomorrow you can step outside the next boundary and see how much fun you have. And invite people to do it with you. Everybody wants to. You can be a pirate.
Now I have to go watch the movies again.
Oh, it's great. The first one and the last one were best. The one in the middle I didn't care for too much.
Right.
But that first one was just, it was a knockout. He really did it. It was good.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I hope to hope to have you back. I think.
I would love it.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.